This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Thomas Ariti. Coming up this Wednesday, from supermarket chains to community clubs, the impact of the coronavirus on the supply chain from China starts to bite. We'll take a look at legal reforms, which could see more convictions in child sexual abuse cases. And we'll have more on the three baboons who escaped from a truck at a Sydney hospital.
Primates are highly intelligent animals, so it's not unusual for them to just be curious. And so they are. They're fiddling with locks. They'll fiddle with windows, not necessarily with the goal of escaping, but that's just what they do. And then if a door opens, they'll go out in.
Well, the coronavirus dominates our coverage on today's show, and we begin today with the economic impact. Fears are continuing to bite into business and the broader economy, with the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, warning Australia won't be immune from any global shock. The retail giant Woolworths says it's on alert about delays in products sourced in China, and it warns problems beyond April could put a dent in consumer spending. Virgin Australia is also slashing flights as the coronavirus cuts demand, and the airline has reported an $88 million half-year loss. Here's the ABC senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan.
With the world on alert for coronavirus, big listed companies are bracing for deeper fallout. Stalled suppliers, frustrated customers, shoppers staying away and watching their budgets. At the Woolworths-owned Big W chain, Managing Director David Walker says there's no impact just yet. But if the virus spreads into April, he might be worried.
Really, the key events we're focused on making sure we understand where we're up to is obviously winter. Mother's Day is a big event for us, and obviously we've got our toy sale. It just becomes a little less precise as we get further out. We're confident up until April. Further out becomes just a little hazy because, again, events are reasonably unpredictable.
Woolworths' first half profit out this morning rose almost 16% to $979 million, but warned of higher food prices from the impact of the drought. For David Walker at Big W, the major focus is keeping the supply of goods flowing from an increasingly cautious world gripped by coronavirus delays.
Bangladesh is where the majority of our apparel is manufactured. China for the majority of our other direct source products. We're really focused on, you know, what's been manufactured by order so far, where the raw materials are, and also what are the transport implications as we start to flow that product back into Australia. At this stage, we don't see any major impacts, and you know that will develop as we get more information to the factories.
The airline Virgin Australia is also feeling the strain. It's cutting flight capacity by 3% because of lower demand from travellers worried by the coronavirus. Chief Executive Paul Scurrah says the virus fallout could slice $75 million from Virgin's earnings in the second half of this year.
It's really difficult to predict what the demand will do in all segments because of the unknowns related to bushfire impact and coronavirus. But we're seeing general softness across all segments.
Treasurer Josh Frydenberg says Australia won't escape a coronavirus shock. And speaking on RN Breakfast earlier today, he stopped short of saying Australia's economy most likely contracted in the first 3 months of this year.
These are economic shocks that are occurring outside of the government's control, and the coronavirus is still evolving, but the economic impact will be significant.
But is that a yes? You are expecting a negative quarter?
I'm not going to give a number. But what I do know is we're looking at it, but this virus has continued to evolve and is still obviously spreading well beyond China.
But in every crisis, there's an opportunity for scamsters. ACCC Chairman Rod Sims says on top of bushfire scams, he's expecting con men and con women to exploit the coronavirus.
Look, we are seeing some. There's certainly issues there. And I think the issues might grow in terms of people booking accommodation or something like that and not able to come because of a concern about coronavirus. The hotel they were booked with might say, well, hang on, how do you know that that was going to be a problem? So I think we'll have a few consumer guarantee issues.
You're concerned there might be social media related or fundraising scams to do with coronavirus?
That's our concern, and we've had some indications of that when people in different circumstances claim they've got the virus, they then set up websites to try and get people to give them money. There's just a whole lot of people out there thinking up clever ways to part people from their money.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average average ended more than 3% weaker after the US Centers for Disease Control said American communities should prepare for a spread of the coronavirus. Australian stocks had nowhere to hide, and the All Ordinaries Index was 1.8% lower in late morning trade.
The ABC Senior Business Correspondent, Peter Ryan. Well, it's not just in big business where supply chains are being rocked by the spread of the coronavirus. Smaller technology and construction firms are now struggling to shore up supply too. Manufacturers in industrial hubs around Australia are looking at alternative options, while one logistics expert suggests Australia's meat and dairy producers could actually see a surge in demand. Gavin Coote reports.
Of all the groups hit by supply chain disruptions due to coronavirus, a local running club mightn't be the first one that comes to mind. Jenny Burge is the uniforms officer of the Woodstock Runners, who train in Sydney's inner west 3 to 4 times a week.
Well, this year is our 40th anniversary for the club, and we've put in a design and order to get some special shirts made for members to run in. Subsequently, we found out that many of the factories in China have had extended close downs enforced by the government. Consequently, the timeline extends out for that supply chain. So, yeah, we're working with the company that we get our shirts from to maybe fast track, but it's looking very tight.
The ripple effects of COVID-19 are now being felt by small businesses as well. But there are concerns they're not being factored into national plans for a potential pandemic. Peter Strong heads up the Council of Small Business Australia.
We need to now make sure that what is needed for small business is delivered. So if, for example, someone cuts public transport for 2 weeks or whatever, what does that mean for the small business sector? We don't want to add to any panic or worry that is unnecessary. At the same token, we've learned from the bushfires that we've got to prepare.
He warns manufacturers, big and small, are among those already hurting as supplies from China slow down.
And there's lots and lots of little manufacturers out there. Now, they're either not getting their raw material or their goods coming in from overseas that we need, particularly from China, or the markets have dried up as we can't send the manufactured goods again off to China or wherever it is.
The slowdown's also being felt in the technology sector. Geoffrey Clifton is a senior lecturer in transport and logistics at the University of Sydney. He's just received an email this morning from one of his suppliers saying there'll be a delay in delivering IT products to his unit.
It's particularly affecting custom-built items because there's no inventory behind them. So where there's an inventory of, so it's a standardised product, we're likely to see fewer delays, or at least the delays won't kick in, you know, until those inventories are exhausted. But once those inventories are exhausted, we'll see even more slowdowns, more delays in supply chains. And it's a function of the fact that we're so interconnected these days.
But it's not all doom and gloom for Australia. China's food industry is under renewed scrutiny over concerns the coronavirus originated at a market in the city of Wuhan. That's prompted the country to ban the consumption and trade of wildlife. And Geoffrey Clifton thinks this is good news for Australian food producers.
Our meat and dairy markets aren't that tightly linked to the Chinese markets for obvious reasons, but it's likely to, in the long run, probably increase demand for Australian produce because we're seen as providing a clean, safe, healthy product.
Angela Haynes is the president of the Cumberland Business Chamber, which takes in the Sydney suburbs of Smithfield, Wetherill Park and Fairfield.
But we look at this as the heart of the Western Sydney manufacturing region. We manufacture things to supply other manufacturers. We manufacture goods out to the consumables sector. So you'll have businesses that will have a production slowdown. They'll have a workforce that they need to retain, obviously, to support the rebuild of the sector. And then you're going to end up with tighter, they're already on tight margins. So you're going to have profitability potential impacts. And that's what we're seeing in the ASX listed profit downgrade. So this is being thought about at the big end of town, but actually it needs to be thought about at the local level.
Manufacturers in that part of Western Sydney will soon meet to nut out ways they can make their supply chains more resilient to shocks from coronavirus.
Gavin Coote reporting. Iran was already considered a coronavirus hotspot, and in a dramatic turn of events, the country's deputy health minister has now tested positive himself. Controversy has also erupted over the seriousness of the outbreak in Iran, with allegations authorities are covering up the extent of the spread. In the meantime, the virus has emerged in the Canary Islands, while in South Korea and Italy, cases have surged. Annie Guest has the latest.
As the outbreak worsens, viewers of the BBC are directed to a live website to keep up.
In all likelihood, sometime quite soon, there's not going to be much point in me trying to update you on all the developments in the global spread of COVID-19, the new coronavirus, on the grounds that there's simply too much to cover.
That includes news from Iran. The cases appear to be concentrated around the pilgrimage city of Homs, where 3 million people visit each year. There are conflicting accounts of just how serious the outbreak is. One local politician says COVID-19 arrived 3 weeks ago and 50 people have died. But officials in Tehran say 15 have died and 95 are infected. On Monday, it was the job of a sweating and unwell Iranian deputy health minister, Iraj Harichi, to deny a cover-up. A day later, he tested positive himself.
I would like to inform you that I have been infected with coronavirus. I had a fever yesterday. My first test was positive last night, and I have isolated myself. They informed me a few minutes ago that my final test is definitely positive. I'm starting my treatment and my general condition is not bad. I had a fever, which, God willing, will decrease. I am carrying out my duties via telephone. I hope that after a few days, my symptoms will decrease and I will return to continue to serve you. God look after you.
There's concern the virus may have spread to other members of the Iranian government. But President Hassan Rouhani is stressing that the situation is under control and that widespread quarantining measures are not necessary. The situation in Iran has now escalated to a diplomatic row. Here's the US Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo.
The United States is deeply concerned by information indicating the Iranian regime may have suppressed vital details about the outbreak in that country. As of yesterday afternoon, Iran was second only to China in coronavirus deaths. All nations, including Iran, should tell the truth about the coronavirus and cooperate with international aid organizations.
And there are questions about whether Iran can handle a huge outbreak. The World Health Organization's Margaret Harris says they're sending help.
We are sending a mission into Iran as well, and they have asked for our help. And it's a situation where we should not be really looking to be so critical of Iran, but asking Iran what they need and offering that help.
In South Korea, there are now about 1,000 cases with more than 10 deaths. Meanwhile, a hotel in Tenerife in Spain's Canary Islands is in lockdown after a doctor from Italy visiting the hotel tested positive for the virus. In the worst affected European country, Italy, the number of deaths has risen to 11 with more than 300 infected. Several other European countries, including Switzerland and Croatia, have reported their first cases. And in the United States, health authorities warn Americans to brace for the coronavirus to spread and potentially cause severe disruption.
Annie Guest. Lawyers representing survivors of child sexual abuse say they hope legal reforms announced today will lead to more perpetrators being sent to jail. The New South Wales government has become the first jurisdiction to introduce the reforms recommended by the Child Abuse Royal Commission. The changes could mean multiple allegations are aired in one trial, and they could pave the way for allegations from previous trials to be revisited before a jury. Earlier, I spoke to institutional abuse expert and Melbourne lawyer Angela Sidrinis.
These reforms are aimed at situations where there are multiple victims, and it's not unusual to find in historical institutional abuse claims that a single perpetrator has allegedly sexually assaulted a number of victims. And what's happened in the past is that alleged perpetrators, where the Office of Public Prosecutions has sought to run the trials of multiple victims together, perpetrators have appealed to have separate trials. And in those cases, we found that the prospect of conviction is reduced because the only evidence before the jury, often given the nature of child abuse, which happens behind closed doors, is the word of the victim against the word of the alleged perpetrator. And given that we have a standard of proof of beyond reasonable doubt in our criminal courts, it is more difficult for juries to convict where it's one person's word against another.
Just to clarify then, do these new reforms mean that the prosecution can summarise evidence that they might have heard in a previous trial involving an accused sex offender without actually saying whether that alleged offender was actually convicted?
Potentially, yes. But to do that, they would have to have the prior victim available and giving evidence about the tendency. There's a distinction between the prosecution standing up and saying to the jury, oh, this man has been convicted of 10 other offences against 10 other child abuse victims. What the reforms are aimed at is the evidence of those victims being allowed to be admitted about what actually happened, not the fact of the conviction, but what actually happened to them, because that's the tendency evidence.
Right. So, I mean, part of this points to an accused person's tendency to have a sexual interest in children. So in other words, establishing a pattern of behaviour, if you like. If this evidence becomes admissible in Victoria, for example, where you work, how could that change the way you approach your work representing alleged victims?
Well, I mainly deal with the civil side of claims, but obviously a conviction in a criminal matter is extremely important in a civil claim as well, because the conviction essentially becomes proof that the assaults occurred. And what I've found for many of my clients in the past is that when separate trials have been ordered, and I've been acting for a group of victims, the OPP will run the first trial, which has the strongest evidence, and they lose because it's one person's word against another. Then they'll try the second victim and they lose, again, because it's one person's word against the other. And often they'll say to the third, fourth, fifth victim, look, we're not going to run the trial because we're just not going to get up. So what these reforms will do is that by essentially creating a reverse onus almost, where there is a presumption that the tendency evidence will be heard together, that means that the trials of multiple victims are more likely to go ahead as opposed to being separated into separate trials.
Doesn't that, I mean, looking at this not as a lawyer, doesn't that undermine a basic principle of our legal system, though, where evidence of prior convictions or evidence of, or tendency evidence that can be ruled inadmissible because that could unfairly prejudice the accused?
Correct. And that's why the special rules regarding the admissibility of tendency evidence exist and continue to exist in our criminal trials. But what was found, particularly in relation to child abuse matters, is that the nature of the abuse or the offending, alleged offending, always happens behind closed doors. It's very rare to be able to find independent evidence, as you would in other criminal matters, which result in there being more evidence than just the victim's word against the perpetrators. We are talking about really a unique set of cases. Now, you might say, well, a murder's going to happen behind closed doors as well. But what we're dealing with in the case of child abuse claims is that these cases always involve children. And that, I think, creates an environment where an exception to the normal rules might be appropriate. And given the research done by the Royal Commission, I think the decision by the New South Wales government to change the laws is entirely appropriate. And I would be hoping that other jurisdictions follow.
Melbourne lawyer Angela Sedrinis. It was quite an unusual sight in Sydney last night, the escape of three baboons at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. The primates escaped from a truck transporting them to a medical research facility there, where a 15-year-old male was set to undergo a vasectomy. They've now been recaptured and investigations underway into how they broke free. And in the meantime, the incident has reignited a debate about animal research. Eleanor Whitehead has this report.
It's not every day you see a monkey in an inner-city Sydney car park.
I've rustled up a couple of mates and came out here hoping to catch a baboon.
That's witness Cody Carr. He's a first-year University of Sydney student from Bathurst.
Basically, I saw a whole bunch of police commotion from three escaped baboons because one of them definitely did not want a vasectomy.
New South Wales Health Minister Brad Hazzard says three baboons escaped on the RPA hospital campus after a lock on their truck failed. He commended the primates, the male and two accompanying females, for their impeccable behaviour, but said he'd launched an investigation into how they got out.
I've certainly indicated to New South Wales Health and to the research facilities that I'd like a full report on how they managed to escape.
Alison Behe is head of biological anthropology at the Australian National University. She's got a few ideas.
Primates are highly intelligent animals with larger brains for their body size for any mammal. And so primates escape quite often from zoos. It's not unusual for them to just be curious. And so they're fiddling with locks. They'll fiddle with windows, not necessarily with the goal of escaping, but that's just what they do. And then if a door opens, they'll go out it. So if this truck did in fact have a faulty lock and they were fiddling around with it and the door opened, then they'd run, they'd go.
While transporting the animals in a group might have helped to calm them down, she says it would have been a stressful environment.
Not knowing where they were, it would be unfamiliar. And that might heighten then the need to, I guess, the drive to go once the door had opened, is that it is unfamiliar. It didn't have any of their things around them. And as I say, primates are very intelligent and they do know their environment and then might very well be unsettled in an unfamiliar environment, just like we would if we were all of a sudden put in this environment that we didn't know and being taken somewhere that we weren't sure where it is. It makes you very uncomfortable and it would increase the stress level.
A New South Wales Health spokesperson said the baboons were returned to their breeding colony in Wallachia in Sydney's west late last night. Humane Research Australia CEO Helen Marston told RN Breakfast that primates are sent on from that facility to research institutions around Australia.
Quite a number of different experiments that they're used for. Primates are usually used in very invasive research, including brain and vision experiments. Baboons have been used in xenotransplantation research and diabetes research that involves the transplantation of whole organs from pigs to primates and usually to baboons. They've also been used at that particular hospital in radiation studies.
She says there were almost 300 primates used in research in Australia in 2017, the most recent year that figures are available for.
This is something that very few people are aware of. We are constantly assured that these animals have world-first protection, and yet we have uncovered incidents where primates have died unexpectedly, incidents of neglect, and in this case now that they escaped from a truck because the lock wasn't properly on.
In an email, the National Health and Medical Research Council said the use of non-human primates has led to advances from which all Australians have benefited. Senior health advisor Professor Anne-Marie Hennessy says they've played a critical role in the research of kidney disorders, vascular diseases and complications in pregnancy.
And I can just reassure everybody that the colony exists and works to the highest standard with a minimum numbers of animals used only where it's absolutely essential to protect and to progress a research issue that's of major concern to the Australian community.
The ABC understands the male baboon has not yet gone under the knife.
Eleanor Whitehead reporting there. That's all from the World Today team for this Wednesday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening. Don't forget you can find all of our stories on the show's website and you can download the podcast. Just head to your favourite podcast app. I'm Thomas Arete. Thanks very much for your company. Have a lovely afternoon.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal.
No one wants to use the word pandemic when it comes to coronavirus, especially the World Health Organization. But the question has now shifted from if to when.
Today, coming to terms with the inevitability of COVID-19 and what governments should be doing once containment fails.
Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.